Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case.
It is Tuesday, November 30th, the wildest 48. I mean, we're talking about 25 hours in college football history with the coaching carousel kicking off. Lincoln Riley named the head coach at USC, leaves a blue blood for another blue blood, and then just shocking news yesterday. And I got tipped off about 2 hours before it broke that, that it was happening because two friends of mine actually were getting offered jobs at LSU. And so I knew I heard Brian Kelly was taking the job, and I honestly didn't believe him. I was like, whatever, they're so full of shit. And then sure enough, it hit the papers. Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame for LSU. Wild time to be in college football. And just side note before we get going here with Chris Drew, put out the episode, my breakdown of the game, and I'm not even done with the main episode that'll come out later tonight, but it's an hour and 5 minutes already. I went play by play through the entire rivalry game and talked about what happened. And if you're not on our Patreon, check out patreon.com/menacetosports, $5 a month and you get shows early, custom RSS feed. It's a really cool, I guess, tool, and it's a way to support the show. So just go on there for $5 a month. You can listen to that show and additional shows. But anyways, an hour and 5 minutes breaking down everything that happened. And it was wildly evident what the problem was. One, Denzel Burke was playing hurt, and it's just a shame they had him out there. He wouldn't tackle. He wouldn't hit. He got cooked on a number of routes, which has not been his MO all year. And that was not a dominant, not even a good receiving core that they went against. So he was problematic. Not the biggest problem. The biggest problem on defense overwhelmingly was the linebackers' inability to fit the right gap and attack the ball at the line of scrimmage. They were sitting back waiting, catching tackles. They were backdooring blocks, creating huge creases and getting out of their gaps. And then Ohio State just gets blocked. They're like Velcro. They try to attack and defeat blocks instead of creating edges and penetration. And that was the main issue on defense. And then on offense, I mean, the offense, honestly, the biggest problem was Ohio State doesn't have a multiple run game. It's all stretch zone. And eventually that shit wears thin, especially you think about this, Chris, if you're running stretch zone, like you're trying to stretch the field horizontally to create creases. If you're going against two really good defensive ends, and they're really, really good, Michigan's two, and they just build a wall that you're trying to stretch into it, you just create a pile of bodies because you can't stretch the edge and everyone else is moving horizontally. It just creates a pile of shit. And so that was the biggest problem I saw. Also, CJ Stroud played very average, and anybody that tells you otherwise does not know football and did not study the film. His stat line was impressive. His everything on the surface was impressive, but he left a number of throws. I mean, I would say out of 40 with some throws, he missed probably 15. Missed. And granted, there was a couple that could have been caught, but if you're talking about a Heisman Trophy quarterback, that was not Heisman Trophy quarterback play. He would not step up in the pocket. Everything time he avoided pressure, he was eluding pressure, you know, outside, trying to scramble around rushing DNs, screwing his tackles. And then there was probably five or six throws that if he steps into the throw, he's going to get hit. But if he steps into it and puts some juice on it, it's either complete or it's completed sooner and guys can catch and run. Like he didn't play his best game. Simple as that. Now he's not why we lost or Ohio State lost. I would say we, he's not why Ohio State lost, but he didn't play great.
Fair or not. You do not get to be the quarterback at Ohio State and play an average game against Michigan.
No, you don't. You don't. But also on that, episode, Chris, the Patreon only episode, I put out my bookie with promo code Menace Parlay. And of course it hit. So those of you that are out there in the public that didn't listen to the show or aren't subscribed, you missed it, but I'm going to give you one today, but it hit. It was the Washington Redskins. And I think Iowa basketball, two leg parlay paid, I think it paid a little better than even money. So that hit. I'm kind of getting a little hot here with my morning picks. But I got a parlay for you today, Chris. You ready for it?
Yes, sir.
So go to MyBookie, sign up, make a deposit with promo code Menace. They'll deposit match you. They also all the time do these promotions where like a certain game will be plus 250 if you bet on it when the normal odds are minus 110. So it's a pretty cool site. I am taking the Nets at home. It's a three-leg parlay. Nets at home, Lakers on the road, both those money lines parlayed with my Blue Jackets to lose to the Nashville Predators in Nashville. So it's the Predators hockey, Lakers obviously basketball, and then Nets money line. So that's a three-leg parlay. I don't have the odds, but I'd imagine that pays out pretty decent, probably 2.5 to 1. So lock that in on my bookie. Let's keep this little streak alive. But anyways, enough about all of that. Check out the show either on Patreon or later today. The public access will come out. But let's talk about this wild, wild west shit, Chris.
Oh my goodness, dog. It has been something else. So obviously the Lincoln Riley thing came out on Sunday, and then the movement on that. I saw the video of him leaving in the middle of the night, Oklahoma, and then all the stuff the next day. And it wasn't just him, Zach. He took basically everyone on that staff that was worth anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and it just goes to show people that, you know, you always find out a coach's value in moves like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like Alex Grinch has been getting so much heat from Oklahoma fans and even the national media for Oklahoma's defense not being very good. But the reality was, I mean, he's done a great job developing that defense, and he's on the private jet to USC. Like, not even like, I'll call you in a couple days and hire you. Like, no, he's on the fucking jet with Lincoln Riley. So he clearly is a very, very valued member of what Lincoln Riley believes the future of his program is, now the Trojan Nation. So it just very evident. And also with Brian Kelly leaving, the overwhelming, I guess, rumor or what I've heard is he didn't tell anybody. I mean,
He didn't tell anybody.
He didn't tell the players. I mean, I saw the text message he sent saying, you know, he feels bad that they had to learn of it, you know, through the media, and he'll be back and would like to meet with the team to officially tell them goodbye. And it's like, who the fuck is coming to that meeting? Those players aren't coming to that meeting. Are you crazy?
But what does that meeting look like, though? That's got to be hostile, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been in one. Let's see. I think I've been in, yeah, just one, when Urban Meyer resigned and then didn't resign. Like, he took back his resignation. But yeah, it was very, very strange. Is the AD was there, Urban was there. Urban kind of got up in front of the team, gave this bullshit, like, read a statement, and then walked out. And it was like very like, at this point in time, I need to step away to be with my family and for health reasons, and so I will no longer be coaching here at Florida. And then he just walked out of the room, and everyone's like, what the fuck? Like, there's no authenticity to you. Like, no, you're not going to be genuine. You're not going to talk to us. Like, you've been yelling and screaming at us, like talking about a family and talking about, you know, you care about us. And then that's how you leave, like some absolutely awful, like generic message, and then walk out. It was awful. And that's why when he came back, I was like, well, this ship is sinking. Like, those kids didn't have any genuine buy-in that next year, and it was an epic disaster. But I don't know what those meetings. That's the only meeting I've been in, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen. But the fact that Brian Kelly did not tell anyone on his staff, and I know for a fact he's reached out to two coaches and offered them jobs. So I mean, he's telling coaches not on his staff before he's telling his staff. And the wildest part about all this is, if he's gone, I believe Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell are the leading candidates to get that job. I don't think that's a hot take. I think everyone in the country believes that. And if Luke, you know, they got to take the job. The early signing day is coming up. So these moves are going to happen fast, right? They need to get a coach in there in Notre Dame fast to salvage whatever Brian Kelly had going on in recruiting and try to salvage this class. So the reality is, you can have two teams in the playoffs without head coaches,
which would be unbelievable.
And honestly, they could play each other. Luke Fickell's team could be playing Luke Fickell's new team. Think about that.
That would be super, super awkward. And like, does the committee take that into account when they get released this next top four?
I think they absolutely do. I mean, it's no different than if your quarterback gets injured, right? You're without a head coach. Like, are you as good of a football team? Unfortunately for Notre Dame, they don't have a game this weekend to show that they can still play at an elite level. So all it's going to be is a lot of speculation, a lot of talk. They're going to have to listen to the media and pray. I mean, they're a Catholic school, so go to Touchdown Jesus and say your prayers, get a rosary, go do confessionals, and ask the Almighty to please let you in the playoffs, because that's all Notre Dame can do right now.
Now, you mentioned two names for that coaching job, but you failed to mention the third name that is a sleeping fucking giant, Zach.
Who?
Urban Meyer. What do you mean?
Oh. Yeah, that ain't happening, but
it's not. Why not? Not at all. Put it to bed right now if you're going to put it to bed then.
No chance. No chance he does that. I don't think he wants to coach in college football again. I really don't. And Notre Dame, he would never go to Notre Dame because they're so pretentious about their academic standards.
I thought that was
standard.
His dream job. I thought that it was one of his dream jobs.
It was one of his dream jobs, but he never took it, and he never would take it because they're so fucked up that they believe that Notre Dame is like Stanford and has to get, you know, all kids with 3.7 GPAs, and they won't take a flyer on a kid that doesn't meet their standards. And it's like, okay, well, you're going to get Stanford results then. And that's what, you know, they've obviously exceeded Stanford results, but they're not, you can't compete with Alabama and Ohio State at Notre Dame with those academic standards. Cause the reality is there's places where the school systems suck. And we've had some kids at Ohio State that had, I mean, very, very below average GPAs or didn't have a great test score. They come into Ohio State, they get the support they need. They get the tutoring, they get the, you know, the development by an academic program, and they thrive at Ohio State. Who, you know, the average ACT is 32 to get into Ohio State. But these kids that have a 23 on the ACT can thrive because they've just never had a good school system teach them shit, like teach them how to be a good student, teach them the material. And so Notre Dame's just pompous ass. They can't get over that. And so Ohio State's cool how they do it because, you know, when it gets down to a kid that doesn't meet even the student athlete standards, right? I'm not talking about qualifying. They obviously have to be above qualifications per NCAA standards. But at Ohio State, if a kid, you know, kid's really low in the test score and GPA, but he qualifies, right? They're going to have a case-by-case basis, and Urban's going to talk to the director of admissions about that kid and say, here's why we think he can make it here. Because what you don't want is to bring in a kid that struggles like that in high school because he's just doesn't have the IQ, doesn't have the intelligence, right? He's not smart enough.
And then he sinks, and then he sinks.
Yeah, and then he sinks at Ohio State. You don't want that for the kid or your, you know, you don't want to waste a spot on a kid that fails, and you don't want the kid to fail. So, and we've had several examples of that where a kid, you know, we're recruiting that we like, we say, you know what, that kid has no chance. And so he ends up going to West Virginia or so, you know, somewhere like that. But it was case by case, and I mean, I'm not going to put names out there because I don't want people to know their you know, their business, like the personal business about grades and IQ and stuff like that. But there were several kids that didn't have the highest IQ, had maybe a low test score and or a low GPA, but because they were good kids, because you knew they would work at it, you took a chance on them, and they thrive, they succeed, they graduate, they're successful. Notre Dame is typical. I'm not even going to say that. They just cannot get over this like elitist mentality. And that's why Brian Kelly left for LSU. Brian Kelly's a phenomenal football coach. He has done phenomenal things at Notre Dame. He went to LSU because he wants to win a national championship, and the shit ain't going to happen at Notre Dame.
I think he's a great fit down there, Zach. Like, I think that is an ideal fit. I mean, he was able to dominate a lot of people with that offensive line. And think about what he could do with the O-line there if they get one in place with LSU.
Well, and you know what? They're just going to need a quarterback. That's the biggest thing at LSU. If they get the O-line development that Brian Kelly has had in his career, he's had great O-line coaches everywhere he's been, or his whole tenure at Notre Dame. If they get the O-line development and they can recruit a quarterback, I mean, it's lights out. We saw what happened when LSU had a quarterback with Joe Burrow. Now, granted, he was generational, but they don't need a generational quarterback with the talent they're going to be able to recruit in Louisiana. Brian Kelly, I think, does an outstanding job recruiting, but he's been handcuffed because he's at Notre Dame, and it's a tough sell for kids. You get on campus and there's like one hot girl in the entire campus. it was just a tough place to recruit at that level. And I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? Brian Kelly left to win a national championship. And a lot of people are saying, I don't know if that's a fit. Like, I don't know if we forgot, like the best fit, like if you're talking about cultural fit for LSU that I've ever heard of was Eddie Orgeron. Like Creole son of a bitch, Louisiana homegrown. Like he was a big time fit.
Take it easy on this girl, boy.
Yeah, right. And not long ago, I mean, it was kind of a while ago now, but there was a Midwest guy with Midwest roots that was the head coach at Michigan State that got the LSU job that was not a fit at all. Mm-mm. Stiff white guy, from the Midwest. What does he know about Louisiana? Some bitch won a national championship, and now he's the greatest college football coach of all time doing it at Alabama, Nick Saban. So let's not talk about fit. Fit is ridiculous. Now, I think there is certain bad fits, but I don't think Brian Kelly in Louisiana is a bad fit at all. He'll hire, you know, he's going to keep Corey Raymond. He's going to hire some, you know, Louisiana natives and Southeastern coaches that have recruited the landscape, and he's going to lock down the state of Louisiana like Louisiana State has done every year since Louisiana State started playing football. And I think he's going to be a wild success. I think both hires have been outstanding. And I also think this is a wild time to be an athletic director. I mean, these are two moves that you never would expect to happen, right? Notre Dame is a destination job. Oklahoma is a destination job. And the contracts, I mean, Jesus, USC is going to pay Lincoln Riley like something like, was 100, I don't have it in front of me. It's like over $10 million a year. They gave him just handed him a $6 million house. They bought both of his houses in Oklahoma for $500,000 over market value. So that's another cool million they handed him. I mean, this is highway robbery. I mean, unlimited use of private jets for personal reasons. What the fuck? Like, back up the Brinks truck.
He's literally the president of California.
Yeah, no doubt. And he landed in LA and was like, what the fuck, masks? You guys still do that? I'm telling you, I wouldn't go. I couldn't live in California with that fucking guy Newsom. I couldn't do it.
I'm not doing it.
No, I mean, I guess for $15 million, I'll wear a mask the rest of my life. But
I was going to say, I'll wear a mask everywhere. Right.
But it's why James Franklin inked a huge deal. Mel Tucker inked a huge deal because that is the trend now in college football, right? Mm-hmm. NIL and all the transfer portal, everything going on. These coaches are becoming hotter commodities. And what just happened in the last 24 hours? Oh my gosh, it's changing the landscape of college football forever. Ryan Day is going to get a new deal. Everyone's going to get a new deal because it's like, what? If you'll leave from one blue blood to the other, basically for a large sum of cash, you better lock your guy down with a long-term contract ASAP.
Since Sunday, Zach, I think that this is the most important shift of college football the last 15 years. I think a couple things are happening that's causing all this. First of all, right now, everybody thinks they can win in the next 5 years or so. Second of all, the transfer portal is causing some seismic shifts where blue blood schools are kind of not able. Everyone's going to be a little bit top heavy. So if you miss on maybe one or two guys that you kind of plug in the starting lineup, that depth is gone because of the transfer portal. And I think that's what's happened with schools where you've seen Alabama kind of take a step back, come back to earth a little bit. Obviously, it's Nick Saban and he's great and they're going to be great as long as he's there. But that thing's going to slow down a little bit because of that. You're seeing kind of the movement at Georgia. They're kind of at the top. But outside of those two schools, there's no more four horsemen type thing because Clemson has fallen off. So now you feel like, at least now more than ever, Zach, I think that there are more teams that can actually win if they get a good head coach. I would argue that next year there are legitimate seven or eight teams that can win a national title, and that hasn't been the case in the past. And exclude this year. Years before this, it's really been Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and then you either rotate a school like Notre Dame who's going to get in the playoffs just to get boat raced, or a school like Oklahoma who was getting in the playoffs but also getting beat pretty bad as well. So now more than ever, everyone feels like they can win, and teams have seen, or we've seen at least, teams win with mediocre coaches. Now it's ready. The money's there to spend for the big-time coaches. This is a crazy shift in college football, and it's not done yet. Because now there are two destination jobs without head coaches. They're going to get somebody. Oklahoma has to make a hire now, and so does Notre Dame. So this coaching madness is only in chapter one, and it's going to keep going for at least the next week and a half.
There's no doubt. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, and I didn't look this up, so this is just me speaking from memory, but this is the first time where all four playoff teams are going to be new playoff teams compared to last year's, right?
Correct.
Like, none of these teams were in the, like, it's going to, if it all ends today, right? It's mm-hmm. going to be Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, probably, right? I mean, we'll find out tonight how the
committee... Well, and Alabama has a shot at Georgia, of course.
Right. I guess that is the one that is still out there. I'm counting Georgia as winning that game, and especially after how Alabama played on Saturday in the Iron Bowl, I don't see how that they're mm-hmm. even in the conversation, to be honest. Right. But assuming that happens, right, then you have four new teams, and some of these teams, Cincinnati and Michigan, first time ever being in the playoffs. So the landscape is certainly shifting. It's more wide open than it ever has been. And you're right. I think the transfer portal is a huge deal. And it's a monumental deal, right? And some coaches' ability to utilize it as an asset and other coaches' stubbornness, a la Dabo Swinney, are really changing the landscape, right? Michigan State is a different program in 10 months, basically all because of the transfer portal. And now they're getting, I mean, Mel Tucker is fucking killing it. They're getting a running back transfer from, Wisconsin. They're likely to get a running back transfer from Georgia Tech, possibly. And he's just killing it. He's back in the portal working that shit because Kenneth Walker III is probably gone. So he's got to get the next one, what we talked about. But just wild times in the landscape of college football. I think the other thing that this does, this shift and these monumental moves that are being made, it puts a ton of pressure on schools like Ryan Day that are going to make some staff changes, right? And it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I think everyone's really looking at, all right, the defensive staff, how's that going to shape up? I'm also interested to see the offensive staff, how that shapes up. I mean, the defensive staff, there's rumors that Larry Johnson's retiring. I definitely could see that happening. And then obviously Kerry Combs, Al Washington conversation. Are they going to be, you know, brought back next season? And then what do you do with Matt Barnes, right? Was he, you know, kind of handed a bag of shit and tried to mold it into a sculpture? Or was he part of the problem, right? That's what nobody knows. I know this. The defensive play calls were better. I studied the entire game on Saturday, and I liked the calls, right? I didn't necessarily agree with, you know, running a nickel package when they're running the ball down your throat every play. But you have to understand something. Like, there was no play where the nickel caused a problem in a run fit, right? Michigan did a great job of getting Denzel Burke in the run fit. Right. But he's not your nickel. If you had three linebackers on the field, the way that Ohio State plays defense, zone coverage, you bump guys out. And then if you overload one side with receivers, you got to bump linebackers out. And then a corner has to play in the box. That's defensive football. Right. Unless unless you want to play with no corners. Like, I don't think Marcus Williamson was definitely average as shit. Probably his worst game of the season, but that was mostly in coverage and getting blocked by walkout or by receivers. Right. I don't think it was a nickel issue. I didn't have an issue with that. And the run plays, I mean, they had the bodies. They just didn't fit it right because the linebackers are confused and D linemen were, you know, we played Jerron Cage every fucking snap and didn't play Tylenol Williams except for two plays. I mean, a fucking second leading sack getter on the team and freshman All-American.
The most disruptive player in the entire that
one. We only played him two snaps and Jerron Cage is out there just getting abused. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it was schematics. And so I don't know how much of it could be on Matt Barnes. I think that corner was a major concern. Seven Banks wasn't available. Denzel Burke was playing half injured. And then Cameron Brown, I thought, played really well. And then, you know, who else do you have, right? I don't know. They obviously don't trust those younger corners yet. And so is Kerry Combs going to be retained? Is he going to stay on staff? And then who replaces Larry Johnson if he retires? I mean, I've been very vocal that if Larry Johnson's gone and Greg Studdrow was gone and I was the head coach at Ohio State, I'm hiring Randall Joyner right now from Ole Miss and I'm hiring to be the D-line coach. And Justin Fry is probably already on a plane to Columbus. I mean,
I love Justin Fry.
I mean, he's the best online coach in the country, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And he's also good friends with Ryan, worked with Ryan before, is a Midwest guy, was a 4-year starter at Indiana, Big Ten background. Like he's the perfect fit. And he's not like most online coaches. He's my age. So relatively young very young in the coaching world at this level, Ohio State. Right. And he has personality. He recruits his nuts off. He can relate to kids. Like he's a great fit. And so I think those are the two hires that I'm making. And if we're going a full on coordinator switch, Matt Barnes maybe was part of the problem and we're going to LJ retires and clean house with the rest of them. I mean, you got to really look at some options here at defensive coordinator. And I think that starts with DJ Durkin. And we talked about it before. I just have a lot of respect for him as a coach. I think what he's done at Ole Miss is he did a really great job at Ole Miss. Trying to rebuild that defense. And he's an outstanding hire. Another Midwestern guy, Ohio guy, played at Bowling Green, was all MAC player, worked for Urban Meyer. I mean, just coached in the Big Ten.
He's going to have to weather a storm, though. And Ryan is going to have to weather a storm. If he gets a call and gets hired, Zach, you know ESPN is going to smear the shit out of that.
Yeah, I mean, they are. But at some point, Ohio State needs to not give a fuck about ESPN. Like, They hate you. Why do you bend the knee for ESPN? Like, they just trash Ohio State constantly. They're clearly anti-Ohio State. Why bend the knee to them and not make a move because you're worried about them? Yeah. I would hire DJ Durkin and give the fucking bird to ESPN and say, fuck you guys. We're hiring him.
Because they'll bring it up.
Like, he was the head coach and a kid died in the strength and conditioning program. So, like,
in the offseason, I think, but he wasn't even allowed to be there.
Yeah, it's wild. And I know that the buck stops with the head coach, but that guy's going to be condemned and can't be a coach in Ohio State because that happened, you know, without his knowledge and he wasn't there.
It's interesting. It's funny because if it does happen and they do, and he does get the call and he does get hired, I want everyone to know that when he got hired by Ole Miss, ESPN did not do a single article on it. Not one. I looked it up. I went through 6 pages of history and search for that. They did not have anything on him at all.
Well, why do that to their cash cow, the SEC? They don't want bad publicity for their cash, baby.
On the defensive line side, the guy I would like is Elijah Robinson. He's the interior defensive line coach at Texas A&M.
So here's my question. A lot of people say that. I don't know the guy. Why? What makes him so good?
From what I've read and been kind of told, that he's close with LJ and one of the LJ guys that LJ really trusts
in terms of like development. I believe it. And I think that a Larry Johnson disciple is definitely a good move. I don't know that you're going to get him from Texas A&M.
Yeah, I don't think you are.
Texas A&M's got pretty deep pockets. And so you would have to really make a move to make him some kind of coordinator to do that. But yeah, I think the good thing is, I think Ryan will rely on Larry Johnson to help him, you know, figure out who to hire. And so I think that would be a good hire. I mean, he's obviously a Larry Johnson guy. The defensive line at Texas A&M is a really well coached group.
It's interesting, Zach, because, you know, he's not the actual defensive line coach at A&M. He's only the interior D line coach.
He's a D tackles coach.
Yeah. So I think maybe not slapping a coordinator job, or at least make Texas A&M really pony up some cash to keep him.
Well, you give him the full defensive line. That's a huge. I mean, people don't know that, but that's a huge promotion. I mean, you go from being an inside receiver coach and you go to probably a step up school like Ohio State to Texas A&M, right? You go from Texas A&M to Ohio State. There's probably a slight step up, right? You would say, and then you get a full group. Like, you don't just coach two guys; you coach all four. I mean, that's a huge promotion. So that's a good point. Either one, I'd be fine with. And I just know Randall Joyner, and I know that. I know that one. You know what I mean? I don't know Elijah. I know Randall, and I know what you're getting there. So that would be my move. It really would. And then if you could bring DJ Durkin in, find a way to – you're going to have to back up the Brinks truck on that one now. Lane Kiffin ain't letting that one go easy. But I know.
And really getting the two of them from one school together could help cohesion in the room anyway.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And you know, obviously then you would rely heavily on DJ. If Ryan was to make that move, he would rely heavily on DJ Durkin's opinion of Randall Joyner, right? And DJ may say, no, he's got to come. He's excellent, which I know he is. And I know DJ thinks that. So I think those are two moves you make. I guess secondary coach is one I'm not really sure about. I'm not sure what they would want to do. I think if you're looking for a linebacker coach, if DJ is going to be a walk-around guy, a guy that I think is a phenomenal football coach that should be on the radar is Sean Cronin, who's a linebacker coach at Colorado State. I think he's just never got that first big job, right? I worked with him at Florida. I worked with him at Marshall. I worked with him at Temple, and he's always gotten jobs. He's always gotten jobs from people that have worked with him and know him, right? Steve Adazio, Charlie Strong, Doc Holliday, like guys that know him and have worked with him. They always hire him. He just can't seem to crack that big time job. And, you know, once you do, I was talking to one of the coaches that got offered an LSU job, who's works not even in the Big Ten, but and we were talking about is once you get that big time job, you just have jobs thrown at you all the time, like Alabama, LSU. They just, because it's like a sexy hire. Hiring a guy from Colorado State's not sexy, but if they want a phenomenal football coach, that's one that I would put my stamp of approval on. Secondary is the one that's harder for me. I'm trying to think of who that would be, and I'm not really positive. I mean, I know people throw Corey Raymond's name around. They throw these names around. I'm gonna have to do my research on that one. So maybe later in the week we'll do a dream staff episode where I can really give you my, if I was head coach at Ohio State with an unlimited budget, this is who I'm hiring.
I would love to do that. You know, I'm geeked out about the coach. I do have a question, Zach. The Notre Dame job's opening. Do you think Jeff Hafley would be a fit there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Jeff Hafley would be a great fit there. That's a great name. I think he would be third in line just because of the longevity of success that Luke has shown, and more specifically Matt Campbell has shown. But Halfley might honestly be the best.
I think he'd be, yeah, I think he would be, I don't know. That just came to me. That just feels like the best hire for them right now.
Well, and you know what? Speaking of him, what he's done at Boston College is been outstanding. And I could definitely see him being in the mix, especially because BC is a similar feel, a Catholic school, kind of like Notre Dame. But it brings me to a point that I saw on Twitter. I meant to say this. You know, a lot of people are criticizing this defense. Like, well, this is what this defense looks like without Chase Young and without first round corners. And Joshua Perry made a point that I've been saying, you know, all year, really for 2 years. And the point is this: that's all bullshit. If you have a great coaching staff that teaches these kids the defense very, very well, and they trigger, they fit gaps properly, they're aggressive, they're tough. Jeff Halfley's doing just fine with his scheme at Boston College without first round corners and without Chase Young. He's doing just fine. Mm-hmm. The defense is a very, very good defense. So this defense works. And not to mention, I hate to break it to you, I think Cameron Brown he could have an unbelievable NFL prep and become a late first round, second round guy. I think Denzel Burke will be a first round corner when it's all said and done. So they do have top end NFL talent at corner. So pause on that. And then, yeah, I get the defensive end pass rush situation. Zach Harrison has been a complete bust compared to, you know, expectations. Tyreek Smith has been a solid player. But honestly, the defensive tackles, Tylenol Williams, who apparently doesn't play for Ohio State anymore, and Haskell Garrett have been the two best defensive linemen. So the pass rush was definitely an issue. But you can't tell me it's because we didn't have NFL talent. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
No, it's Ohio State. Like, that's right. That should never be an excuse from the fucking get go. I think that was foolish. No. And that was people blindly giving people excuses to justify their team not, you know, playing well enough. As a recruiter, when you see coaching changes, how quickly do you revisit guys that maybe turned you guys away?
First thing you do when there's coaching turnover, whether an assistant coach leaves or a head coach leaves, head coach gets fired, doesn't matter. The minute there's any turnover, the first thing that's happening, Mark Pantone is sending out the commit list to everyone on staff and saying, hey, take a look at this and see if there's anyone you want us to get, you know, dive back into bed with, right? First thing you do, and you just try to just go savage mode. And I would always reach out to every receiver immediately. I mean, even if I didn't like, even if we didn't want them, even if I hadn't watched the film yet, I'm reaching out right away to just to try to get in the boat, right? And then I can figure out if I want you and I'm going to recruit you, but I need to get in the boat right away. The minute that a receiver coach left, a coordinator left, or a head coach left, I'm in the DMs right away, sliding in like a thirsty dude on a Friday night. I mean, I'm trying to get in the boat just to have a chance in case when I evaluate you, I want you.
Do you think most of those guys, they'll follow Lincoln Riley out west to USC? I know Brandon Innes, the number one wide receiver in the country, decommitted. There's reports that his top couple schools are, you know, Ohio State should be in the mix, Bama should be in the mix, Georgia should be in the mix. But you and I, you know, you kind of think that a lot of those guys will end up following, not just Innes, but guys in general end up falling into USC.
Well, yeah, most of them bought into Lincoln Riley and his program. And now the thing about it is USC is going to be a sexy move. Like a recruit, the first big time commit to USC is going to be huge headlines, and kids know that. Like if there, he's going to go get him. I promise you, in the next week, there's going to be a 5-star big time player that either flips or commits to USC, and it's going to set the world on fire. And then you're going to see momentum roll because Lincoln Riley jumping ship and going to USC kind of set a precedence. Like, well, why would you go to Oklahoma? I left there to go to USC because USC is better. And it's
the NIL stuff attached to that as well. Oh my goodness gracious. They're going to have Mater D, St. John Bosco, all those schools out there, plus the NIL, plus it's sexy.
Let's just put it this way. Lincoln Riley's at USC. There is 0% chance that he doesn't land one of the three in CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, or DJ Uiagalelei. 0% chance. And he probably takes his pick.
Yeah.
He probably has either Bryce Young or CJ Stroud.
Yeah, if he was there in 2019 or 2018. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
If he was there.
Absolutely.
So the future moving forward for USC, and this is what I've been saying, I mean, God, for 3 years since I started the show, this is what the Pac-12 needed more than anything, is they needed a big-time name to take the USC job. USC has to be relevant. Mario Cristobal has Oregon, you know, on the top, right? Now you're going to have those two programs. Chip Kelly has UCLA improving. You'd love an Arizona State to rise to the top, which they haven't been able to do. And then Washington's the other one that has the potential, right, to get in the mix. And then
there's so much fucking talent out west.
You're always going to have Utah. Utah's always going to be a really solid team. They're never
really
be
tough out, super yeah. tough out.
Yeah. So the Pac-12, honestly, right now, with this move, 3 years from now, they're going to be at worst the third best conference in college football, if they're not already. I mean, the Big 12 is gone, but they're going to be pushing the Big 10 to chase the SEC. They really are.
Oh, brother. And especially like with this 12-team playoff kind of will become something at some point. You got to name this era, dog, like this era of college football that we are entering, because it is certainly different than the era that we are definitely exiting.
It all started last year when they allowed the one-time transfer and they approved NIL. The sport changed forever. And I said it was the most monumental offseason in the history of college football. And now just look at what is going on. It is pure chaos. It is the wild, wild west. College football will never be the same. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm here for this shit. This is fucking awesome.
Yesterday was so entertaining, dog. We were going back and forth literally the entire day, just nonstop.
Like you imagine if Bill Belichick announced after the season he was taking the Cowboys head coaching job? Like, what? You'd be like, what is going on?
Yeah, dude, that is some chaos. And it's crazy because, like, we didn't even get to talk about the more Ohio State stuff that we kind of had planned just because all of this happened. I mean, we still have two enormous job openings in Oklahoma and Notre Dame. We still have some big-time staffs that are going to be filled out. I mean, everyone is racing against the clock. Signing day is right around the corner. People are going to be fighting to keep commits, people this and that. I mean, It is crazy. And Ohio State is going to be kind of on that crazy list because they have some destination jobs for coordinators or kind of ladder climber jobs, and they need to get something done. So I think the next 2 weeks are going to be absolutely absurd. For the Ohio State side of it, I think help is on the way, so do not worry about that too much. And additionally, something that I kind of mentioned to you yesterday, outside of all the coaching stuff, was this was the youngest Ohio State team that they fielded in at least the last 20 years, probably maybe one of the youngest teams they've ever fielded.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, the future is bright in Columbus. They need to get the defense fixed.
Yep.
I do believe the offensive line could get developed and coached better. But I said it on my show, that offensive line, they didn't play bad. I mean, we can talk about, in my opinion, it was scheme. And I mean, those DNs are really good players. They're great players, right? They were going to get a couple. But I mean, there was, I don't know, 30 snaps of Aiden Hutchinson one-on-one with one of the tackles where he just gets flat blocked. Like not even push the pocket, doesn't get a little bit of pressure. Like he just gets flat blocked one-on-one. So, yeah, he's going to get a couple. I mean, two of his sacks were C.J. Stroud's fault, not the offensive line's fault. And there was like four dynamic plays.
He blew him up, dog.
Yeah, he blew up there, Mumford. He had an up and under that was outstanding. I think the tackles were underprepared for him. They obviously didn't have film cut up to study him because he has two pass rush moves and only two pass rush moves outside of a bull rush, which you always have to be ready for. He wasn't a speed rusher, and the tackles were oversetting him, and I can't understand it. They were allowing his up and under, which is dynamic. So I think they could have been prepared better, but all in all, I thought the offensive line played okay. I really do. I think the run game scheme was a problem, and I already mentioned it. And I think the receivers had too many drops. Those are the top two reasons. And then C.J. Stroud played, you know, maybe above average, not Heisman caliber. Right.
Absolutely. Well, it was that Urban Meyer line: when I needed you the most, you gave me your very best, and we did not do that. But dude, I cannot wait for the next couple whatevers. I know help is on the way. And don't be surprised. Like, I don't want to, you know, we're not going to say anything else about it, but this Ohio State coaching room is going to look significantly, significantly different next year.
Outside of the ones we just mentioned, like I said, I think there's one other coach that leaves for other opportunities, at least one other, maybe two. So it's going to be a completely different coaching staff next year, which is good, right? Change stimulates growth and production. So I think it's really good. If you could do us a favor, we talked about it before, go to iTunes or Spotify, leave a 5-star review and drop your questions in there. We go through it every night to see if there's any questions. And I forgot to bring them with me today, but we'll get to them maybe tomorrow or later this week. Leave us a 5-star review, drop your questions on your review, and we will field your questions on the morning show with Chris Drew. Appreciate you tuning in. And Chris, you got anything else?
No, sir. Menace out. All
right, let's go. Menace out. Menace Nation, it's Menace morning time.
Wake 'em up. I don't do the most, but I do a lot. Tryna hide from the camera. I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on egg today.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma put up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be coming.